Welcome to the Deep Dive. We're here to cut through the noise, get you those clear, actionable insights. And today we're really zeroing in on a concept that, well, it sounds simple, but it's got this surprising twist for anyone building products: iteration. You know, when you hear iteration, you think improvement, refinement, moving forward, right? Building momentum. But here's the paradox. Sometimes, especially for startups moving fast, iteration can actually trap you, trap teams in what people call an MVP loop.
That's exactly right. Yeah, the MVP loop, minimum viable product loop.
Yeah.
It's that really frustrating cycle, you know, where you're just tweaking, endlessly tweaking, but there's no real progress. You feel busy, you're prototyping, refining, but you're not quite shipping. You're not learning from the actual market. It ends up killing momentum, not building it.
And that's precisely what we want to unpack for you today. Our mission here is to sort of draw a line between that bad iteration, that momentum-sucking MVP loop, and good iteration, the kind that actually fuels success. So we're going to arm you with, you know, actionable stuff, some surprising facts maybe, and real stories about why some products just take off, and others, well, they just kind of fizzle out. Okay, so let's dig into this then. When does iteration actually go wrong? What are the signs, the red flags that maybe you're stuck in one of these MVP loops and don't even know it?
Well, it really comes down to misalignment, I think. Bad iteration. It's usually marked by endless fiddling with features, you know, without actually checking if they deliver value to real users. Often there's this underlying, maybe a fear of shipping, which means you miss out on that crucial real-world feedback loop. Teams can get caught chasing features, trying to perfect everything internally. And that's a huge warning sign, relying only on internal feedback. You end up in an echo chamber, right? It's so hard to see past your own assumptions then. The whole point of iteration should be to propel you forward, not just, you know, polish things in isolation forever.
That echo chamber effect. Yeah, I see that a lot. So, okay, if that's the bad kind of iteration, what does it look like when it's actually working, when it's unlocking momentum? This is where it gets really interesting, I think.
Yeah, it boils down to about five key shifts. Insights from folks like Chris Mullins really highlight these. First, you need to shift from iterating on the product itself to iterating on outcomes. So the wrong way is just constantly tweaking the UI, adding features, without knowing if they actually matter or have impact. The right way. Each iteration is designed to test a really clear hypothesis. Something specific like, will users actually pay for this? Or will this change reduce our support tickets?
Ah, okay. So it's not just building stuff. It's building to learn if that stuff achieves a specific goal. Is that it?
Precisely. And based on that test, you make a conscious decision. Do we pivot? Do we persevere? Or do we scale this thing? Every single iteration needs to be tied back to a specific measurable metric. Could be business, could be behavioral, like user activation, retention, or, you know, willingness to pay. So, for example, instead of just endlessly polishing an onboarding flow because it feels better, you test whether, say, 10 users can successfully complete a core task, and then you dig into why or why not. That's your outcome. The second shift, you've got to time box your iterations with clear decision gates. Put strict time limits on things. Maybe it's a one-week design test cycle. Maybe it's a three-month runway to get your MVP out the door. But the crucial bit is each cycle has to end with a clear decision. Ship it, scrap it, or scale it up. This stops that indefinite prototyping trap dead in its tracks. Think of it like that lean UX cycle, you know, build, measure, learn. But crucially, with a hard go-no-go checkpoint after every build.
Okay, so imposing a deadline, basically. Forcing a decision to keep things moving. That makes a ton of sense.
Absolutely. Third, and this is huge, involve real users and, if possible, real revenue early on. You have to validate your ideas in the actual market, not just with pretty mock-ups or internal demos. Launch what some people call mini MVPs, or maybe concierge MVPs. Get them in front of real users, even if they're rough, even if the back end is you doing things manually. And here's a key thing. Getting someone to actually pay for it, even a small amount, early on, that's like the ultimate validation. Buffer's famous story, right? They tested demand just by putting up a landing page to see if people would even sign up before they built anything substantial. Fourth, stop iterating in isolation. We talked about the echo chamber. Teams stuck in MVP loops are often just talking to themselves. You need to bring in external stakeholders, get feedback from advisors, beta users, and especially those early paying customers. That real-world friction, that honest, sometimes brutal feedback. That's what kills the perfectionism bug. You know Reid Hoffman's famous line, if you're not a little embarrassed by your launch, you waited too long.
Yeah, that quote always hits home. It really challenges that natural desire to make everything perfect before anyone sees it.
It really does. And the fifth shift ties into that. Define a clear enough-to-launch threshold. Focus on identifying the minimum lovable product, MLP, not the perfect product. List only the absolute must-haves, the core things needed to test your main value proposition. Then, once you launch, you use actual customer behavior, real data, to drive the next set of iterations. You move away from your internal guesses and into validated learning from the market.
Those five shifts, wow, they really reframe the whole concept, don't they? They take iteration from being this potential procrastination trap and turn it into this engine for genuine momentum, pushing you past paralysis and towards, hopefully, product market fit. So, okay, what does this all mean for how we actually go about building products day to day? It feels like it's not just one step in the process, but something continuous.
That's a really critical point. Yeah, your first design idea, it's almost never the best one. The really effective digital products, they emerge through these repeated cycles of designing, testing, refining. It's totally different from a linear waterfall style process, where making changes late in the game is incredibly costly and painful. Iteration weaves feedback in right from the start. And frameworks like design thinking, lean UX, they've really embedded this idea. Design thinking, for instance, it's intentionally nonlinear. Those phases empathize, define, ideate, prototype, test. They're meant to loop back on each other. And what's fascinating here is how even research itself becomes iterative. It shifts from being this big upfront task to, well, more of a continuous feedback loop. People talk about continuous discovery, doing user research in smaller, frequent chunks all the way through the project, not just kicking things off.
Right. So it's not just ask users once, then build. It's constantly checking in, constantly course correcting. And doing that, that continuous discovery, it shortens the feedback loop so much. It cuts down the risk, right? Because you're always feeding fresh customer insights into your decisions. It helps make sure the team is actually solving the right problem based on what users need now. Think about Airbnb's early days. Their success really came from iteratively testing their core concept, really immersing themselves in what hosts and guests needed, and constantly refining their value prop based on that ongoing understanding.
Then you move into ideation. Iterative approaches here really encourage generating a whole bunch of ideas. First, think quantity over quality initially before you start narrowing down and refining the ones that seem most promising. Techniques like Crazy Eights are great for this. They force you to generate lots of ideas quickly.
Crazy Eights, that's the one where you sketch, what, 8 different ideas in 8 minutes? It sounds frantic, but I guess it forces you past the first obvious solution. And doing that probably leads to more innovative stuff, better team alignment maybe. Designers can kind of take risks with early sketches, knowing they aren't final, they'll be tested.
Exactly. I heard about a big bank. They use design thinking workshops to iteratively hash out ideas for their online banking app. Things like mobile check deposit, personalized tips. They went through sketches, got quick feedback, threw out a lot of initial thoughts. But that iterative co-creation, it led to some really innovative user-vetted features in the end. Okay, so you've got some promising ideas. Now prototyping. The mantra here is really build to think. Prototypes aren't the end goal. They're just tools to get feedback. You typically progress iteratively from really low fidelity stuff like hand sketches, paper prototypes, up to more high fidelity interactive mockups as you learn more.
And the beauty of that, I guess, is that mistakes are super cheap and fast to fix early on, right? With a sketch, you're almost designing to fail early, find the flaws when it costs nothing so the final thing doesn't bomb. Like, fixing a confusing paper prototype takes minutes. Fixing it after it's all coded up, that's a different story.
Totally. Nielsen Norman Group, they're big names in UX. They recommend at least 2 or 3 iterations for any design. They pointed that even just a second iteration usually uncovers a ton of remaining usability issues. I saw one study where a key metric improved by something crazy like 233% after 6 rounds of iteration. It really makes a difference. Think about Google's material design system. That didn't just appear fully formed. It evolved through countless internal iterations, testing across Google products like Gmail and others, constantly tweaking based on user feedback. Then there's testing. Testing is iterative by its very nature, and it's woven into every stage. It's not just a final checkoff. Usability testing gives you the direct insights you need to make the next design improvement.
And it's more than just usability tests, right? Once something's live, you've got things like A-B testing, comparing version A versus version B, or heat map showing where people click, analytics, all feeding back into that refinement cycle, evidence-based changes. And design thinking, it loops you right back if testing reveals big problems. It's all about those small early failures over big late ones.
Yeah, like an e-commerce checkout redesign I heard about. They tested iteratively. Yeah. First, users were confused about delivery versus billing address. Fixed that. Then they hesitated at the credit card form. So they iterated again. Clearer labels, real-time validation, maybe a progress indicator. Those small iterative fixes significantly boosted completion rates because they caught the problems early. Moving to development, iteration continues, usually through agile methods like Scrum or Kanban. The product evolves piece by piece, incrementally, in short cycles or sprints.
And Lean UX fits right in there with agile, doesn't it? Focusing on outcomes, building small things, features, MVPs just enough to test a hypothesis quickly, that think-make-check loop.
Exactly. Doodle, the scheduling tool, is a good example. They used Lean UX, tested a simple homepage copy change iteratively. Result? A 54% jump in free trial signups. Huge impact from a small, tested change. Another time, they built a lightweight version of a new calendar invite feature. Showed 40% customer usage right away. That validated the demand and guided how they developed it further. And finally, there's post-launch refinement. Launching isn't the end. It's really just the beginning of using real-world data, actual user feedback from the live product, to drive continuous improvement.
Yeah, you see the big players, Amazon, Facebook, Netflix, are constantly running experiments, tweaking things, fine-tuning their products long after the initial launch. It never really stops.
Right. All those feedback channels, support tickets, app store reviews, social media, they become fuel for the next iteration, making sure the product keeps adapting. Slack is a great case study here. They continuously added and refined features like the customizable sidebar, threaded messages, better search, all driven by user feedback and how people are actually using the tool. And Slack itself, its origin story, is an iteration. They pivoted from a failed game because their internal communication tool turned out to be the more valuable product.
That's amazing. And Netflix too, right? With their autoplay video previews, they didn't just launch it and leave it. They iterated on the timing, the controls, based on engagement data, even added an option to turn it off eventually, responding directly to user feedback. It shows that commitment to ongoing user-driven improvement. This is all incredibly powerful in theory, but how do teams actually do this? What frameworks help them put iteration into practice, make it part of their workflow?
Well, two really foundational frameworks that come up again and again are design thinking and Lean UX. Design thinking, it's that human-centered, non-linear approach we mentioned. Empathize, define, ideate, prototype, test. But the key is, it expects you to loop back as you learn. It's built for learning and adapting based on user needs.
And the results can be pretty dramatic, can't they? I remember seeing a McKinsey study, companies that were really design-centric using these kinds of iterative approaches. They had something like 32% higher revenue growth and 56% higher returns to shareholders compared to others. That's serious business impact.
Absolutely. And then Lean UX. It basically merges user experience design principles with agile development practices. It emphasizes minimal deliverables just enough to learn and rapid iteration through that think-make-check cycle. Formulate a hypothesis, build something small to test it, measure the results, and let that inform your next step. Ultimately, both frameworks, design thinking, and Lean UX, they push teams towards the same core idea, building a culture around hypothesis, test, and refine.
Okay, but even with great frameworks, we're human, right? Our brains can get in the way. What are the psychological hurdles? The biases that stop teams from really embracing iteration? This feels like a big aha moment for a lot of people.
Oh, absolutely. There are definitely common cognitive biases and psychological traps that make genuine iteration hard. First one is anchoring bias. That's getting fixated on the very first idea or piece of information you encounter.
Right. You fall in love with your first concept and just can't see past it. Happens all the time.
Exactly. The way to fight it? Actively run parallel design explorations. Force yourself and the team to come up with multiple distinct options and use structured critiques that require looking at alternatives. Second big one, the sunk cost fallacy. You know, continuing down a path just because you've already invested time or money, even when the evidence shows it's not working. To beat that, you need a culture that truly values learning over just being right. And keeping those early prototypes really low fidelity helps it feels less painful to discard a sketch than a feature you spent weeks coding. Then there's confirmation bias. That's our tendency to seek out and interpret information in a way that confirms what we already believe and ignore evidence that contradicts it. To counter this, you need structure. Use evaluation rubrics, meticulously document both positive and negative feedback from testing, maybe even rotate who observes user tests to get fresh eyes. Groupthink is another classic problem. The desire for harmony within the team leads to avoiding conflict, stifling dissent, and ultimately making poor decisions.
You can combat this by maybe assigning someone the role of design devil's advocate for specific meetings, or using anonymous methods for submitting ideas or feedback initially. Building psychological safety is key here.
Yeah, creating that environment where it feels safe to disagree or challenge ideas, that's crucial, isn't it?
It's fundamental. Then there's the simple fear of failure. Just being reluctant to try new things because you're anxious about being wrong or looking bad. The antidote is to normalize failure as learning. Frame those early prototypes explicitly as experiments or tests, not solutions, and involve stakeholders early in testing, share the risk, share the learning. It shifts the focus from I failed to we learned something valuable. And lastly, status quo bias. Just a general preference for keeping things as they are, even if change might be better. It feels comfortable. To overcome this, you can use things like comparative usability testing show users, the old design versus the new one side by side. Use data and metrics to demonstrate the potential long-term gains, even if there is short-term friction. And sometimes, highlighting what competitors are doing can create urgency for change.
It's so clear that adopting iteration isn't just about process or tools. It really requires this conscious effort, this cultural shift to recognize and counteract these very human biases that push against change and continuous learning. So let's flip it around. What happens if you don't iterate? If you ignore this whole cycle of refinement, what are the real dangers?
Oh, the pitfalls are pretty severe, and they ripple outwards. For users, you end up with products that have poor usability, features nobody actually needs or wants, maybe accessibility issues you never caught, and just products that don't connect emotionally. For the team building it, you get overconfidence in those initial untested ideas, huge amounts of wasted effort building features that flop, siloed thinking where design, engineering, product aren't really talking or learning together, and honestly, real demoralization when that big bang launch falls flat. And for the business itself, you're looking at a much higher risk of outright failure at launch. Problems found late are incredibly expensive and difficult to fix. You adapt way too slowly to market shifts. You miss out on opportunities for real innovation, and ultimately you get a lower return on your investment. You spend a lot to build the wrong thing.
And we've seen this happen in the real world, haven't we? With some pretty high-profile examples. Can you remind us of a couple?
Sure. A classic is the initial launch of healthcare.gov back in 2013. They largely skipped wide-scale iterative usability testing. The result was a disaster at launch. Confusing navigation, constant errors, site crashes impacting millions. It took months of frantic post-launch redesign work to fix it.
The definition of a big late failure right there. Painful.
Exactly. Or think about Juicero from 2017, that $400 Wi-Fi connected juicer. It was reportedly designed largely in secret in a vacuum. If they'd done more early iteration, gotten real user feedback sooner, they might have discovered much earlier and cheaper that people didn't actually want or need a super expensive machine to squeeze juice packs you could just squeeze by hand.
Yeah, the ultimate solution looking for a problem it didn't need to solve.
Precisely. These kinds of examples really hammer home the reality. Not iterating is basically gambling everything on your very first guess being perfect. Without iteration, product design becomes guesswork. And it's expensive, slow, and incredibly risky guesswork at that.
Okay, let's really unpack this for you, the listener. Why does iteration fundamentally work? Why does it deliver these measurably better outcomes? What's the core payoff here?
Well, for the teams actually doing the work, designers, product managers, engineers, iteration leads to objectively better, more user-centric solutions. Why? Because every cycle injects real user learning. It drastically reduces risk and rework because you catch flaws early when they're cheap and easy to fix. You avoid building the perfect wrong thing. It fosters this culture of continuous learning, making the team smarter over time. And it just results in higher quality products. Like we said, even just a couple of extra iteration cycles can dramatically boost key metrics like conversion rates. And then for the stakeholders, the executives, the clients, the investors, iteration means much better alignment with actual business goals and what the market needs. Decisions are driven by evidence, not just opinion or hope. It mitigates risk hugely. Instead of one massive risky bet on a final product, you're making a series of smaller validated bets along the way. That increases predictability. This translates to greater ROI and efficiency. You stop wasting resources on ideas that won't fly.
And it actually increases stakeholder engagement because they see tangible progress more often and have opportunities to provide input based on real learnings.
So ultimately, iteration seems to align the entire effort, the team building it, the stakeholders funding it, around this shared learning-driven path towards success. It really sounds like a win-win for users, for the business, for everyone involved. So here's a final thought to leave you with. In today's digital world, 2025 and beyond, things change fast. User expectations, technology, it's constantly evolving. In that kind of environment, the ability to iterate effectively, it's arguably one of the most valuable skills an organization can possess. It accepts that a product is never really finished, but always in a state of becoming better, always adapting.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'd encourage you listening now to maybe reflect a little. How can you bring more of these iterative principles, this mindset of continuous improvement, into your own work, your own projects?
Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive today. Until next time, keep learning, keep growing, and definitely keep iterating.